CF Benchmarks.
An exciting thing in the recent news that I've been seeing is, you know, in general, I think there's people get confused about like, what does institutional adoption mean? And to me, it doesn't necessarily mean a lot of like massive pension funds and things like that coming in. Like, sure, that can be a piece of it. To me, institutional adoption is unlocking the gates for broader distribution of crypto products and giving people broader access to crypto products. And every day, every week, every month, we're continuing to see that, right? At the beginning of the year, we saw PNC Bank announce that they're going to use Coinbase as a backend. We saw Citadel Securities announce that they're going to start market making crypto. We saw Schwab announce that they're going to enable crypto trading. Just this past week, E-Trade announced that they're going to support crypto trading, right? Like the dominoes are falling. The distribution is coming. People are going to be able to invest in this asset class without the barriers that have been in place. And it's just something that's happening, but it's going to take a while, right? It's not like Charles Schwab announced it in March, I think, or April. That's going to be like 2027 that it happens, right? But it's still coming, right?
And so the
institutional adoption that people talk about, it's here, it's coming, it's happening. It's just not like a next day thing. These are large businesses with legitimate trust and risk controls in place that just take a long time to move and get the pieces in place before they can unlock it.
You're listening to CFB Talks Digital Assets, the home of informed conversation about crypto for institutions building the future of finance, brought to you by CF Benchmarks, the world's largest crypto index provider.
Hey everybody, thank you very much for joining us for another episode of CFB Talks Digital Assets. My name is Ken O'Delliger, I'm head of content, and I'm joined by my colleagues, Gabe Selby, who's head of research, and Mark Polipchuk, who's our research analyst. Good day, gentlemen.
Great to be here. Yeah, great to see you, Ken.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. And we are super excited as well today because we are also joined and we're excited to welcome Mr. Thomas Matimore, who is CEO of ABC Labs, which is the core developer of a platform called Reserve Protocol. And this is a fast-growing DeFi and tokenization platform, I think primarily, one of the fastest growing of its kinds. And the relationship with CF Benchmarks is that they have been tightly involved in the deployment of LCAP, which is a tokenized crypto fund representing about 95% of the crypto market beta. And so now that's available on the Reserve Protocol. So Thomas, we are super excited to have you aboard. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Ken, Mark, and Gabe. Very excited to be here.
So clearly, we're obviously going to talk about LCAP. We're going to talk about Reserve Protocol. But we've also, in Thomas, got for, you know, the first time in quite a while, a dyed-in-the-wall, deep-in-the-trenches DeFi native contributor to the podcast. So we're obviously just going to pick his brain about all things related to that as well. So Thomas, I think the best way to start this off is tell us a little bit about Reserve Protocol. You could start off with maybe the founders and the sort of the fundamentals, the mission, what you were trying to do, or any way that you want. Just give us some color about Reserve.
Definitely. So yeah, once again, thanks for having me. You know, my name's Thomas, as mentioned. And so at Reserve, our mission is to eradicate inflation. And, you know, to do so, Reserve is today the largest index platform in the DeFi space and in the crypto space. And, you know, what does that mean exactly? There are indexes on our platform, which we call DTFs, which is a decentralized token folio. It's kind of like an ETF, but in crypto. But there's around $450 million of assets within these DTFs on the platform today. There's a broad range of different types of assets in there. It could be a diversified ETH staking product. It could also be dollar yield products, but also, you know, as previously mentioned, something like LCAP, the CF Benchmarks large cap diversified weight index DTF, which is really exciting. As mentioned, it gives access to 95% of the crypto market in a single product. It's fully one-to-one backed. Anyone can buy it either on a secondary market like Kraken or in a DeFi market like Aerodrome or Uniswap. People could also do upfront, you know, unlike a traditional ETF where, you know, only qualified participants can participate in the minting and creation process, the minting and redemption process, rather. With the DTFs, Anyone can participate. Permissionless on-chain architecture allows anyone to participate, whether it's by depositing all of the underlying assets to create this asset and hold it, or to participate permissionlessly in the arbitrage markets, which is typically limited just to the qualified participants, the major hedge funds, et cetera, in the traditional financial markets.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant.
Thanks, Thomas. Yeah, no, welcome to the podcast. My first question to you is kind of like, can you just give the audience just a brief background of how you got here? Like, this is, I feel like, a very unique thing that you're doing and what you all are working on. And so it's I think it'd be helpful to just kind of hear a little bit about your story, give us your background and what ultimately gave the light bulb idea to, you know, start all these projects.
Yeah, definitely. And so thanks for the question. I'll start with, you know, the Reserve story a bit. And then I'll you know, talk about how I got here. So Reserve was founded in 2019 by Nevin Freeman and Matt Elder. The idea was pretty simple. It's how do we end inflation, right? And over the years, that's evolved. We've got a group that's actually helping people get access to stable coins in high inflation economies around the world. The app's called Ugly Cash. It's led by Gabo and a few other folks on the team. And, you know, if you want to help people fight inflation, the easiest way to do it in many parts of the world is to get them access to dollars and, you know, to do it with stable coins, right? And so that group has seen a lot of success in places like Venezuela, as well as Argentina and Nigeria, a variety of different places around the world where inflation is really high. And the easiest thing to do is to give people access to stable coins that are denominated in US dollars to help them escape that inflation. When you have 100% week over week inflation, you don't really care about the 7% per year, right? And so that's been a lot of fun. That project's been going on in some kind of shape or form for that part of the project, rather, has been going on for 6 years now, which is kind of crazy. You know, they've been growing and iterating, doing all kinds of things. I joined the project 4 years ago to help get the protocol off the ground and, you know, to help make it very big. And so we launched it in 2022, the first version, which was the Yield protocol. And then earlier this year, we launched the Index protocol, which is what LCAP is based on and, you know, allows institutions and individuals to launch these index DTFs that, you know, can track professional institutional grade indexes and benchmarks from places like CF Benchmarks, as well as from Bloomberg indices and CoinDesk indices and a variety of other players in the space. And so how did I get here? I've been in fintech for a long time. I 10 years ago, I joined the third largest robo advisor in the world that no one has ever heard of now because it went out of business. But the other two big ones won.
Which one was it? Just because I'm curious.
It was called Wise Banyan. It's a great product, you know, free investment advice and free. It's actually in a way very similar to Reserve. It's how do we bring down the cost of the access to institutional grade products and make it accessible to everyone, right? And I also spent some time in the mortgage industry trying to automate that and drive down the costs and the fees and the friction. And then I discovered MakerDAO. I'd always been into crypto since like 2014. It was always kind of a hobby. And then I discovered MakerDAO in 2021 while I was working at the mortgage company. I was like, wait, these guys are doing more lending volume? And they've got there's 10
people. Bit of a disconnect.
Yeah. 10 people built this protocol and it just kind of runs automatically. And the mortgage lender I was at, you know, I was leading automation efforts. We're the sixth largest mortgage lender in the United States at the time. And we had 500 people on the tech team, right? There's a lot going on, right? And you know, we had to build a lot of different things, and mortgages and collateralized crypto loans are obviously very different financial products, but it took us 30 days to close a loan. And when I used MakerDAO, I realized that 10 people had built this thing and it runs automatically. And, you know, in a couple clicks, in a couple seconds, I was able to get a substantial loan. And all of a sudden, I just had stable coins in my wallet. I was like, whoa, this is major. So I went down the DeFi rabbit hole and was connected with Nevin Freeman, the founder of Reserve. And it was a perfect fit. I wanted to work with a fantastic group of people. I wanted to to build something in crypto that matters and actually touches real people's lives, which as you might know in the crypto space, there's a few places to do that, but not a lot. And with a really talented group of people, which the ABC Labs team is one of the most talented groups of people that I've ever had a chance to work with, which is really fun.
Yeah, I think it would be great that we, if we could kind of double click into that relationship between ABC Labs and Reserve Protocol and the dynamics there. If you could kind of walk us through that.
Yeah, so ABC Labs stands for asset-backed currency, which is, you know, our long-term mission at Reserve is eradicate inflation. Like I mentioned, you know, step one where we are today is to let people create indexes of crypto assets. Step two is to let people create assets of any tokenized asset. As real world assets come on chain, there's going to be more and more things. We think that there's going to be indexes of, commodities, equities, other digital assets that maybe aren't commodities or somewhere in between, eventually real estate and other things as the tokenization of securities gets figured out and brought on chain, we're going to be ready. We want to be the largest index platform in the space. And then future vision, step three is a, you know, large, super diversified asset that can be a backup reserve currency for the world in a world where it's needed. And, you know, we think that an asset-backed currency is the way to do that. Hence the name ABC Labs, Asset-Backed Currency Labs. We are the development group behind the Reserve Protocol. We launched the thing and, you know, we continue to maintain it. We're one of many contributors to the ecosystem, like many other projects in DeFi. You can kind of, you know, Uniswap Labs, and Uniswap the protocol, ABC Labs Reserve the protocol.
Brilliant, brilliant. And, you know, I just wanted to say, actually, Thomas, you know, obviously, you know, in this space and just in finance in general, we meet a lot of people, or the general perception is that, you know, people are just, they are interested in money. But my takeaway for, you know, being in this space for, you know, several years now, coming up to a decade, is that whenever I meet, you know, people like yourself, leaders like yourself, is that, generally, you guys are driven, and it's not necessarily driven by money. In fact, quite unusually driven by just the sort of urge to accumulate. It's actually a mission which you've actually articulated very eloquently, and there's something substantive about that mission. This is really, really refreshing, and I think it's important to actually underscore that for people to hear, because it's actually quite important.
Want to jump in. We do believe that it's very important for incentives to be aligned, and so we are interested in, you know, we do have incentives to make money. I don't want to act like a pure saint here. At the same time, I think that the thing that we're building is really important for. I think it's very helpful for people. And in general, crypto and DeFi is very important for the world and for individual freedom around the world. You know, I mentioned the stable coins around the world, getting people access to them to escape inflation in their country. Like individuals in most countries do not have the ability to change their money supply dynamics, right? But they do have the ability to escape that because of crypto, because of stable coins, because of DeFi. Right. And to me, that is like critically important. And I think it's the same thing with, not to go on a full philosophical rant here, but one of the criticisms of Bitcoin is like everyone holds it in an ETF now. Like you're not even doing Bitcoin anymore. It's like, yeah, but you know what's really important is the option for self-custody. And that option for self-custody and the ability for people to opt out of whatever system they're in is one of the key pieces. And so like in the crypto space in general at ABC Labs, as we're working on the Reserve Protocol, we are a big believer in individual freedom and individual rights. And our goal is to help perpetuate that in the world and to make money at the same time while doing so. So just to be clear.
Love it. No, absolutely. I love it. And 100%. I think what I was going to get at, we can sort of like step up to the next sort of banner point. But I just wanted to circle back just for a second here on Reserve Protocol. So Reserve Protocol, my understanding is that it's more like a platform, and it's certainly not necessarily an on-chain network. Now, first of all, is that correct? But secondly, what was the reasoning behind going for that method of, creating a platform for this kind of activity? And why did you select that type of model, basically?
Yeah, so you're absolutely correct. It's a platform. It's built on top of the Ethereum blockchain and some of the L2s like Base. At the end of the day, the platform itself is a platform that enables people to create indexes of other assets, of any tokenized asset. Today, those tokenized assets are mostly crypto assets. As I mentioned earlier, we anticipate that it's going to be all different types of tokenized assets. But today, it's crypto assets. And so the really important thing is that all of those assets are available. And so within the Ethereum ecosystem, within the Base ecosystem, there's a lot of great infrastructure now that actually enables those assets to be available. And so what's really amazing on the Reserve protocol on Base or on Mainnet or on some other chains is that you can actually create these indexes of basically anything. And it's one of the things, anything in crypto today, to be clear. I think in the short term, you know, as things get figured out, that'll be really any indexes of anything. But, you know, one of the special things about DTFs is that you can, in one click, buy a basket that addresses 95% of the market. Before, to do that, you would have to buy assets off a variety of different blockchains. But now, with all the infrastructure that's available, you can do it in one click in one DTF. Without jumping around to, you know, to 40 different blockchains.
Yeah, I actually wanted to ask about the assets that are eligible for inclusion here. So it's not just native crypto assets, right? If we had, like, say, you know, PaxG tokenized gold, that would work in there, or with tokenized equities now starting to make waves. Is it possible for us to start to make moves there with token equity DTFs?
Yeah, so definitely. The platform is compatible with all of those things. PaxG in particular has been something that people have been talking about for a while. LCAP doesn't include any of these things, notably because, you know, it's an index, right? And so LCAP tracks the CF benchmarks, large cap diversified weight index, which is 8 crypto assets, the largest 8 crypto assets that hit the filter mechanisms. But yes, any tokenized asset could be included. PaxG, tokenized stocks. There's some things to figure out on the regulatory front with tokenized stocks. And, you know, that's, I know we were talking about the Clarity Act before the video started rolling here, but as that gets figured out, and, you know, we can go into this later. We've got a whole initiative within the Reserve ecosystem trying to figure that out. But as that gets figured out, they can definitely be included. Technically, they can be included today in DTFs.
So our audience here is pretty institutional, is going to be pretty familiar with a lot of these ETF structures and the mechanics of create, redeem, and rebalancing within them. So I guess let's start by walking through some of the key similarities and differences between ETFs and DTFs, specifically around who's able to participate and, say, create, redeem, as well as the rebalancing process and how that works.
Definitely. So a lot of the experience is very similar for various different types of users with ETFs and DTFs. Just like with ETFs, with the DTF, you can, you know, anyone can buy it in one click on a exchange, right? In traditional finance, that is a brokerage. In crypto, that it might be an exchange like Kraken, it might be a decentralized exchange like Aerodrome or Uniswap, but anyone can buy it there. One of the main differences on that front is in a typical ETF, only qualified participants are able to do the arbitrages when the net asset value of the underlying assets differentiates from the net asset value or the price of the ETF itself. And so there's few parties they need to be permissioned in order to partake in that arbitrage to do the creation and redemption events of the ETF itself. You know, that is, like, for the S&P 500, that would be going and buying all of the 500 stocks underneath, sending them to the trust company, and then getting back ETF shares in return, right? And so that's like a very specific, highly regulated process that's been going on. With the DTF, that's all encoded in smart contracts. And actually, anyone can participate. So anyone can go get all of the underlying assets, deposit them into the protocol, and get the DTF back as a receipt token. And so, you know, once that happens, anyone can do it. But once that happens, that token can then be sold on a place like Kraken, or can then be sold in a place like Aerodrome or Uniswap. We actually, you know, it can be very annoying to go buy all of those underlying assets, though, right? You know, in LCAP, it's only 8. In something like, you know, in like finding where those assets are trading and going to buy them in the right amounts and then depositing them, right? That can be really annoying. We did build something, we call it the Zapper. So in one click, and this is where the magic of programmable money and DeFi comes in a single trade, you can actually take something like USDC or Ethereum or, you know, any other stablecoin and send it to the Zapper. It will go out, it will find the exact amounts of each of the underlying assets and buy them in a single transaction and deposit them into the protocol and then get you the DTF back all in a single transaction. So that's where like the magic of DeFi really comes in and where programmable money is going to unlock, you know, better experiences in this case, but also, you know, I think there's so much more that can be unlocked by, you know, bundling things together like that, automating them, making them cheaper and easier to do.
Yeah. And as you see more participants, especially like that, you should see far lower, really low tracking error compared to some things, because the fees on a layer two are basically non-existent, right?
Exactly.
In terms of tracking error now, what are you guys kind of seeing there?
Yeah. So we see it hovers around 0.5%. You know, it's the asset's only around $7 million of TVL right now. And so, you know, the markets aren't super deep. They're not super liquid. But yeah, it's funny though. From day one, once this thing goes on, there's all kinds of automated arbitrage bots that already start picking up transactions from day one. You know, in the crypto and the DeFi space in particular, they're typically called like NEV searchers, right? For people that might know that term. But they've got these automated bots that are going out and looking for, you know, it doesn't matter how small the opportunity is, they're looking for the opportunities where they can just make a few cents or a few dollars or, you know, $10 or $30, whatever it is. And they'll just execute that transaction, get the profit and go. And it's great, right? You know, we were talking earlier, I think this was before this started, but we were talking about Citadel entering the crypto markets and liquidity being good, right? Having anyone around the world being able to participate in these arbitrages is actually very good. And like you mentioned, Mark, it's going to drive really, really, really tight, really tight asset prices for things, especially like this, where it's a basket of underlying assets.
We're sitting like in the front seat of what is probably one of the most like, I don't know, consequential financial experiments with mass participation and arbitrage. Like you said, it's just interesting to me that anyone could go out and put the pieces of the puzzle together and you know, find a, maybe a discount of, you know, building the pieces up yourself to, you know, just buying the token on a centralized exchange somewhere. And so I think, you know, it's going to be really interesting to follow. One question that I have is, you know, there's assets that are in there that are proof of stake. And if you just hold the asset yourself, you know, you can choose maybe to stake the asset somewhere, you know, work together with a staking provider. How does this DTF work? How does this concept work with staking assets and trying to receive rewards and receiving yield?
Yeah, so any tokenized asset can be in the DTF. Currently, I believe LCAP, let me just quickly check here. I'm pretty sure LCAP doesn't have any of the staking versions of these in the basket itself right now. But in the future, governance could opt to include the staking version of those assets, as long as it's a tokenized asset. And so, you know, ETH, Solana, et cetera, you could include tokenized versions of those in the basket for sure. And in fact, I imagine that it'll happen faster than, you know, the SEC.
Most things happen faster than the SEC. Yeah, even the revamped version. But on that point, let's sort of like drill down a little bit into I think this is a porous distinction and it's going to become increasingly so. But to begin with, I think the demarcation was quite relevant between index DTFs, if you like, and yield DTFs. And I think they were called R tokens before. Could you sort of like, obviously index DTFs, we've given the example of LCAP several times, but so yield DTFs would be simply those DTFs that are tokenized versions of yield bearing, if you like, protocols. Would that be correct? Or something, is there something else to that model?
I think the easiest metaphor, a DTF is like an ETF, but in crypto. A yield DTF is kind of like a money market, but in crypto. And so it's just, okay, it's bundling together all of these yield positions for a various asset, whether that's stable coins or whether that's Ethereum, and bundling it together. And then there's a bunch of different safety mechanisms to ensure that that yield is collected safely, aggregated, reinvested, and over-collateralized, actually. And so there's a safety mechanism there. It's not exactly like insurance, but it's kind of similar in some ways. You know, it's got some similar actions where, you know, if there's a DPEG of the underlying, the the over-collateralization layer can kick in and make up the difference for holders if there's enough over-collateralization. And so we've actually seen that happen. I don't know if you all remember, I think it was 2 years ago when USDC depegged because the Silicon Valley Bank had a bank run.
Yep.
And you know, before the FDIC stepped in, you know, there was three days
overnight, right?
Yeah, there's 3 days over the weekend of you know, everyone in crypto scrolling Twitter to see whether or not the money was still there. And what was really cool
is, crazy situation. Yeah.
The what was really cool though is one of the stable coins on the Yield protocol, it's called EUSD, the electronic dollar. It actually recollateralized well before the banks opened their doors on Monday. And so, you know, it sold off the difference and you know, made that up to the holders of the stable coin. So that they could, you know, not need to scroll Twitter and just know that these automatic smart contracts are gonna handle the safety for them. And so, you know, I think it's a really good example of like how, again, DeFi and smart contracts and programmable money can create better financial products for people.
We've kind of touched on it, but under the broad umbrella banner of governance, let's talk about another key component within DTFs and reserve protocol in general, reserve rights, which are the core governance token used for, you know, to stake on Yield DTFs, and obviously are a key component of, my understanding is, in core staking mechanics. Can you run us through very briefly the sort of construction of RSRs and, you know, their key purposes as well?
Yeah, definitely. So very simply, RSR is the governance token of the reserve ecosystem. There's a variety of ways holders can use it to govern. But for indexed ETFs in particular, which is probably most relevant for listeners today, holders of RSR can choose to participate in governance, which is an administrative role to assist with rebalances on tracking the index, right? So when CF Benchmarks release the new version of the index every quarter, governance will put in a proposal to make any adjustments in the basket as needed. For the most part, because it's, you know, for the most part, a weighted index that is tracking the market caps of the underlying assets, it is really just making trades. You know, trades only really need to be done if an asset drops out and another one comes in. But because there's some caps on the index for some of the underlying assets, Bitcoin and any asset is actually capped at 40%, I believe. And so Bitcoin and Ethereum are both capped. Well, Bitcoin rather is capped in the index itself. And so sometimes, you know, some Bitcoin is sold off or, you know, some other things are sold off to buy a little bit of Bitcoin either way. But just like the S&P 500 rebalances and swaps assets in and out, LCAP and indexed ETFs do the same thing. And governance core responsibility is to administer that ministerial process on a quarterly basis for things like LCAP, but also for other DTFs as well. And so, you know, I like to think of the governance token as like the way to take a part in the future governing of, you know, the largest, what I think, I'm biased, but what I think could be the largest assets in the entire world, how to partake in that.
Yeah, I would like to maybe take a step back into some of the mechanics of like the auction process.
Yeah, good idea.
I think we kind of skipped that. And I don't know if we could just maybe touch on that and how that rebalance, how that systematically works. And we can kind of keep it at kind of a high level just so our audience.
Sure.
You know, this is kind of
it's stuff. A great idea. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's see how the mechanics of this all works and how, you know, we always talk about smart contracts and it being systematic, but yeah, in layman's terms, how do we get there in the DTF world?
Definitely. So very high level. What happens when a rebalance is going on, right? Like at its core, there's a basket of assets that are held in the DTF, and it needs to ship that allocation of assets to another basket of assets, which for the most part is probably similar, but there's some things that need to happen. And so what happens for a DTF is a new basket is generated, the trades that need to happen are calculated and spat out, and the governance voters can put in that new basket proposal to change it. That, you know, like I mentioned, it happens on a quarterly basis. You know, similar to an ETF, the trust that holds all the assets in an ETF need to make some trades, right? The smart contracts in a DTF need to make some trades to execute on that rebalance. the mechanism in DeFi that is most safe for DeFi protocols to use is a Dutch auction. It's a fancy type of trade, but it's really simple at the same time, right? The price starts really high and then it goes down until someone bids. And at that moment, it sells the asset, right? It's really quick and efficient way to price assets without relying on things like oracles or market prices or anything like that. And it takes advantage of the fact that anyone can participate to ensure that it's going to be a fair price, because the moment it hits the market price, someone's going to buy it and then go sell it, right? And so it leads to very efficient and effective pricing of assets. And so it's the safest way for DeFi protocols to do it. The protocol manages a process that goes through a variety of different Dutch auctions to execute on the trades that are calculated by governance, and then goes through and trades those. We've actually seen, we have a high bar when we design protocols on like how well they're going to work, but we've actually been seeing better execution than even expected on these rebalances. Wow. So far, we're getting, you know, execution on these auctions we're seeing rather execution on these auctions, you know, with like, I think it's 3 9s or 4 9s sometimes. So that's 99.9999% wow. of the trades are happening. Which is, you know, it's great to see, but I wasn't expecting 4 9s, right? Like, wow. I don't know. There's like
amazing,
you know, 5 9s is something like 1 in 10 million, right?
Does everybody ever go up to 100?
Yeah.
That's pretty nuts. Yeah.
Well, that is impressive. Like, so just to kind of do some hypotheticals, you've got this, you know, an index provider like CF Benchmarks, which provides the weights and the tokens of the portfolio. And that gets, you know, put up for a quarterly rebalance, I guess you could say. Every quarter we rebalance our index. And then you have these token holders of reserve rights that, I guess, what you're saying is they vote to implement the changes, or do they vote? Is it simply like a yes or no, like submitting a proxy vote like a shareholder would for any sort of proposal to implement the changes? And what happens if they decide to not proceed with the rebalance? What happens next?
Yeah, so the incentives of these people, like these people collect a small fee, right? And so the incentive of the group is to do a very good job of tracking these. And so the success of the product is reliant on this happening. And, you know, there's a variety of different professional actors that, you know, manage very large amounts of DeFi positions that are participating in governance here. We also participate as well. You know, there's a variety of people that are everyone is highly motivated. There's a variety of people that are highly skilled in making sure that these things happen well. And so what we've seen so far is that they happen flawlessly. We expect them to continue that way. And we've got all kinds of, all kinds of alerting and systems and processes in place with our, you know, within our company, as well as with other companies in the space that are all incentivized to make sure that these things continue to go very well. So like you mentioned, it's a very, administrative role. It's interesting. I've been recently spending a lot of time learning about the history of Vanguard and, you know, the history of mutual funds and the history of mutual funds is fascinating, but the board of mutual funds is, you know, kind of seen very similarly, and especially historically is seen even more similarly, where, you know, very administerial. And one of the core innovations of Vanguard was, how do you drive down the costs as much as possible and make it so that this board is, you know, just executing at cost on the things that are needed to run a mutual fund and to do it efficiently and to make sure that shareholders have the best outcomes. And so I think that we're kind of, you know, this is to me the next evolution of that idea of how do you have a group of people that is very simply incentivized and motivated, you know, to do this one little thing that it needs to do every quarter, just do it really well and drive down costs otherwise. And so I think that's what we're seeing so far. That's our vision of how this is going to work. And, you know, the evidence is continuing to point in that direction.
Yeah. It's and on brilliant. The cost front, one thing that's really struck me throughout this entire conversation is we've talked about just how automated everything is and how everything, all the benefits of programmable, not just the benefits of programmable money, but now we have other assets being tokenized in addition to crypto. Do you see there to be a potential here for this to start to put pressure on maybe other active strategies in other markets where we can have lower fees just because the cost structure is a lot lower here?
I think it's definitely true. And I think it's definitely possible. You know, I think it took over 70 years to really shift from active strategies in traditional markets to passive strategies in ETFs, right? I don't know if it's going to take that long in crypto. Crypto seems to make mistakes faster and learn from the mistakes faster than in traditional financial markets. But yeah, my general thesis broadly is that DeFi and crypto are going to drive down costs around the world and around the industry. You know, I think that passive index investing is a great way for people to get exposure to a market without losing all their money on bad, you know, one-off things. I think it's a really, really good way to get in there. Yeah. You know, I'm not an investment advisor, and none of this is investment advice, but my hope is that now that these products like LCAP and other index ETFs are available, it's the easiest way for people to just get exposure to these markets at a low cost, without, you know, paying a fund to go get exposure to all these different things, or paying, you know, some of the ETFs that are getting approved that are, you know, broad crypto market assets in the traditional finance space have really high fees, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you know, yeah. 250 basis points, I think, for some of the grayscale ones, right? And so you're going to see that come down. I think DTF ones will come down as well over time. And so, yeah.
Yeah, and not to mention, too, we're just, we are largely, you know, U.S. focused on some of our audience. So when we talk about low fees, some people might think, you know, we have like 3 basis point abroad market ETFs here. But if you go abroad and into other markets, the fee structures are significantly higher. So, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely a chance here we could see these low fees that have really helped boost U.S. capital markets hit the rest of the world and start driving growth over there, too.
Definitely. Yeah.
Hey, guys, we are at time and slightly over. But what is top of mind in for you in terms of the outlook, product wise or any otherwise that you might want to speak on?
Definitely. So one of the things I'm, you know, continuing to monitor every day and very excited about is indexed ETFs and LCAP in particular are growing, right? People use these products for a variety of different ways. And, you know, people can use it to buy and hold and dollar cost average into the crypto market, right? With a recurring order on Kraken. More active, sophisticated traders can also use it to take a view on the market in one way or the other. Right. But for some of these like new trading features, let's call them, to be activated, you need the lending facilities underneath to become healthier. And, you know, whether that's, you know, we've seen it actually in the DeFi space already. Some lending markets have been set up for LCAP to be borrowed against dollars or to be used as collateral to borrow dollars. Right. And we're already seeing, you know, for the last couple of weeks that with the market going down, you're seeing a bit more appetite to short the crypto market as opposed to long the crypto market. Right. But that goes in cycles. I expect we'll see it go in the other way as well. And you know, as these facilities get more and more healthy, you'll be able to see things like whether that's perps, which are an individual a specific thing to the crypto space, but it's a type of future that doesn't have an expiration date. You know, or using this asset as collateral in margin accounts, you'll be able to do more and more things with this asset, which I think is one of the magic pieces of crypto. You know, you're going to be able to do this much more quickly than you can with other assets and other asset classes and other in the traditional financial system. And so to me, one of the key pieces of DeFi that's so exciting is that you can use everything as a Lego piece, right? And whether it's a Lego piece of your portfolio or it's a Lego piece within a more sophisticated strategy, it's very easy to do that in the DeFi space with tokenized assets. And, you know, we're starting to see that already. And I think we're going to continue to see it with LCAP. And so what I'm really excited about seeing is what are all the different use cases that that people are, you know, going to be using LCAP for. And you know, it's going to be an exciting thing to watch for the rest of the year.
Looking ahead, how do you see the DTF industry evolving? Do you see more competition coming in? What are some of the things that you all at ABC Labs are going to be kind of working on to kind of help differentiate your guys' products or the stuff that the projects that you're working on from what you anticipate to be coming, you know, around the corner?
Yeah, definitely. So we believe not only in our mission and our vision, but we think that it is how the future is going to play out. And so, you know, once again, our vision is that today we're building index products for crypto tokenized assets. Tomorrow it's going to be for crypto in real world tokenized assets. In the future, it's going to be an index of everything, right? That people can hold to safely invest and no longer need to check their brokerage account six times a day to make sure they're not losing out to inflation or whatever it is, right? And so that's our vision for how this is going to progress. We do think it's going to be accurate. You know, I think in the next 2 years, we're going to see securities regulations get figured out for people to interact with them on chain in a DeFi setting. The protocol's already ready to go for that. You know, is it going to happen this month, and the Congress is going to pass a really good bill in the US? I don't know. Is it going to be in 2026? Is it going to be in 2027? I don't have an oracle on the future. But what I do know is that we're trying to build this product to be ready for it. And so we're talking to tokenized security issuers around the industry to make sure that, you know, it's got the features that they need. You know, we've got we actually have an initiative within the Reserve ecosystem called the Digital Securities Initiative, which is a cross-industry task force working with everyone from the SEC and the CFTC to, you know, participants in the space, different chains, different asset issuers, to try to figure out, like, how do we thread this needle? And how do we make it so that, you know, the principles of DeFi and that individual sovereignty that I was talking about at the beginning of the call are maintained, but also that the requirements of regulators with KYC and AML controls are also safely, you know, implemented, and, you know, that everyone's, you know, needs are met, and we can thread the needle and make sure that we can do that in a safe way. And so, again, I'm hopeful that it happens this year. I'm more optimistic that it actually happens next year. And, you know, I think it'll definitely happen in the next 3 years. And so in general, we're trying to skate where the puck is going on this, on this trend. And we think that the trend is just leading to more and more tokenized assets. And there's going to be more and more indexes of these assets on chain. We think in the form of reserve DTFs, but it might be in any version of a DTF, right? That someone else builds.
My last question for you then is going to be kind of surrounding the token that we've partnered as the index provider on, the LCAP token.
Nice.
Where can people access this, and what does the liquidity look like on that?
Yeah, so the liquidity is pretty deep for LCAP, both in centralized venues like on Kraken, as well as in decentralized venues, which actually powers, you know, it's available on Uniswap, it's also available on Coinbase DEX. And so if anyone's got a Kraken account, if anyone's got a Coinbase account, they can go buy LCAP in either of those places. You can set up a recurring order if you want a dollar cost average into the market on Kraken. But anyone with a crypto wallet can also go buy them on Aerodrome or Uniswap, where they do on the base chain.
Thomas Matimore, head of Reserve Protocol, thanks so much for joining us. That was an amazing conversation.
Thanks for having me, Ken, Mark, and Gabe.
Yeah, thank you.
Brilliant, brilliant. So there you have it, guys. That was Thomas Matimore of the Reserve Protocol. And obviously, I think you'll all agree, Reserve, ABC Labs, and Thomas, major mover and shaker in the DeFi space right now. Hopefully you enjoyed that conversation and found as engaging as we did. If you did, we've got over 50 similar episodes now up there, wherever you get your podcasts to listen or view. And we'll see you again for another episode of CFB Talks Digital Assets. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to CFB Talks Digital Assets. This recording is for informational purposes only and should not be considered investment advice.
This recording is not intended to persuade or incite you to buy or sell any financial products noted within, including but not limited to exchange-traded funds, mutual funds, equities, other instruments that reference any index provided by CF Benchmarks Limited, or crypto assets. Any commentary, interviews, and discussions are opinions only and should not be considered a personalized recommendation. Please contact your financial advisor or professional before making an investment decision. Note, some of the underlying instruments cited within this recording may be restricted to certain customer categories in certain jurisdictions.